This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 23rd, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, taping from my hotel in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Last night we had the Little League Classic. I had planned on leaving here early this morning to return to New York, but I'm going to wait, Taylor, because it sounds like the roads are an absolute mess. Are you okay?
I am well. There was legitimate thought that I might not make it back from Austin due to the hurricane. I was kind of resigned to that fact, and I didn't have my laptop or anything with me, so I was definitely getting a little panicky on Saturday night as I was like, what's going to happen with the show? I thought about you for sure. You know, I forgot that you were in Williamsport, but I was like, oh, Buster's got a flight. That could be hairy too. So made it back home yesterday, and hopefully you won't be stuck there for too long.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was planning on leaving early this morning after we taped the podcast. But then I got an overnight note from our friend Kelly Carey, who works with us at ESPN. She had tried to drive back to Connecticut last night. The roads were an absolute disaster. She was like, boy, you just send a note to Matt Piscurgeon and myself saying, hey, take your time. Don't try to rush back because it's so difficult. So everybody out there, if you don't have to go anywhere, just stay home. It sounds like there's a lot of cleanup to come. On Sunday, the big news happened in the game between the Tigers and the Toronto Blue Jays. This was Miguel Cabrera, 499 career homers as he stepped into the box in the top of the sixth inning.
The 1-1, fly ball right center, deep, got a chance, 500! Miguel Cabrera has done it! The high five to Santiago as he rounds third, and his teammates pour out of the dugout, and this crowd in Toronto on their feet.
Dan Dickerson with that great call, 97.1, the ticket. The Tigers win the game 5-3, and afterward, Miguel Cabrera was asked what he was thinking about during the at-bat.
No, I don't think. When I hear it, I say, come on, get up, something like that. But, I mean, I play in Comerica, so every fly ball, like, that part is out, you know what I mean? I'm glad I hit that fly ball here, because if I hit in Comerica, it's going to be 2 hours.
He was asked about what Sunday meant to him.
I mean, a lot. Like I say, not only for me, you know, the people around me, the team, my teammates, the organization of Detroit, my coaches, the money I have from my whole career. The people from Venezuela, my family, I think it's really big because it's something special for my country, for my family, to be able to do this. I'm really happy, but at the same time, I got to stay focused. I got to keep to my doing and trying to help the team to get better and win more games.
AJ Hinch, the Tigers manager, talked about what it was like when Cabrera came back to the dugout after number 500.
He was emotional about it, the smile on his face, the dugout exploded, it tied the game. What a big moment for us to get the opportunity to be a part of. I just had a little team meeting in there to congratulate Miggy and give him the floor. And you know, I thanked him for letting us be a part of this. I mean, we've seen him do some tremendous things this year, the names he's passed on the hit total, Venezuelan hit king, now he's, you know, 500, one of 28 players. I know our fans back home gave him a ton of support. You know, everybody relaxed a little bit when he hit the homer, and then we were back into the game. So proud for him and his family, and in a career accomplishment that is so rare that, you know, you may never get to be a part of this again. Like, we have no idea who the next person that can be to pass this big number, and really cool experience for our team.
Last night, the Little League Classic here in Williamsport between the Angels and the Indians, and the Indians took the lead in the bottom of the first.
That one is pulled to left, playing way over towards center as Upton at the wall. He leaps and it's over. Just crawled over the 320-foot mark. And just like that, a double and a homer by Rosario. He stays hot. It's 2-0 Indians.
Carl Ravage with that call on ESPN Radio. And that was enough for Cal Quantrill, who was fantastic last night. He was in the game in the top of the seventh.
Next one, he swings at, he misses, and then he actually kicked the baseball into fair territory, so he's going to be called out on a strikeout.
The Indians win the game 3-0. The Mets, trying to hang on in the National League East, finally won a game against the Dodgers, getting help from Javier Baez right off the injured list.
That's lifted in the air, deep toward left center field. Pollock ranging back. It's over his head. It one-hops the wall in left center. Nimmo gets to third. He's being waved home. Relay throw on the way to the plate. It's not in time. Nimmo dives across home plate safely, and Javier Baez welcomes himself back with a rifle of an RBI double to left center field, scoring Brandon Nimmo all the way from first, and the Mets have the early lead for a change. It's 1-0.
That was Wayne Randazzo on WCBS. Mets win the game 7-2. The Phillies play the Padres, the slumping Padres, and Rhys Hoskins had himself a day.
Swung on, belted. Left field, deep, and that one headed for the building. It is gone. Rhys Hoskins with another home run. A solo shot down the line in left, and it's his 26th of the year. And the Phillies now lead it 4-1.
Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Now, going into yesterday, the Padres and Reds were tied in the National League wildcard race. The Padres lose 7-4 to the Phillies. The Reds played the Marlins. Mike Moustakas broke a tie in the bottom of the fifth.
And Moustakas hammers one to right. Well hit and deep and gone, Moustakas. On a laser to right. What a way to snap it. 0 for 26. Moustakas puts the Reds on top with his fifth home run of the year.
That from 700 WLW. The Reds now a game ahead of the Padres in the race for the second wild card in the National League. The Tampa Bay Rays placed DH Nelson Cruz on the COVID-19 injured list as of last night. It was not clear whether or not he would tested positive or if he had just been exposed to somebody else. Chris Archer, G-Man Choi, also left games over the weekend with injuries. The Giants faced the Athletics yesterday. Tie score, top of the eighth inning. This happened.
The pitch. There's a swing, and there's a drive down the left field line. Deep into the corner. Adios, Pelota! Can you believe that? On the first pitch that he saw, Donovan Solano loses one. Hits a laser beam into the left field stands, and the Giants have turned this game around. 2-1 Giants.
Yep, and they would hold on and win 2-1. That was the great John Miller on KNBR. The Braves face the Orioles, and the Orioles' losing streak has become a thing. 17 straight losses going into that game on Sunday. This is what happened at the end.
Smith, plateward. Franco hacks and misses. Strike three over the slider. The Braves complete the sweep of the Orioles, who've now dropped their last 18 games in a row. Final score, Braves 3, Orioles 1 in 9 today at Camden Yards.
And that from 105.7 The Fan. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirkton coming up about the Orioles losing streak in 1988, 21 straight games at the outset of the season. The 2021 Orioles are now officially in that neighborhood. John Means, the Orioles pitcher, spoke after Sunday's game about frustration levels.
I thought today was going to be the day. It felt good. It felt like things were going in our favor, and it just didn't happen at the end of the day. So move on to the next one.
He was asked if there's a reason why things have just spiraled out of control for Baltimore.
I think we've been pressing pretty hard. Honestly, I think, you know, everybody's been trying to fix everything, and I think we just really need to relax and play the game and have fun again, because it has not been a whole lot of fun lately, that's for sure.
And I feel bad, Taylor, teeing you up after he listened to that sound from your Orioles and how they're struggling. But what do you got for us?
John Means looks so sad. I watched this interview last night. I truly feel for all the guys, but very selfishly, yep, and cynically at this point, I'm rooting for them to break the all-time losing streak record. I mean, why not go down in the history books? Go down in flames, and we'll remember this team forever. I guess we probably will anyway, but I would like to see them break the record, just for me personally, but they should probably win a game to turn their moral.
Well, before you go on, I just want to say that was Taylor Schwenk who said that. It was not me.
We're
you
tanking, know, Orioles, Buster.
Twitter, social media, they've got a problem with me. It was not me who said that. It was Taylor, an Orioles fan.
Yeah, I'm all in on the tank now, Buster. We've talked through it, and I've accepted it, and it is what it is. So tank on, baby. Let's go. Buster, before we move on to our pal Timmy on a Monday here, we need to talk about the newest 30 for 30 podcast that ESPN is releasing today. It's in collaboration with The Undefeated. It is The King of Crenshaw. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, particularly in the NBA. Here, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, and DeMarcus Cousins, among others, explore the realities of life as a black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. King of Crenshaw. Binge all four episodes now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. This is going to be a great podcast. I encourage everyone to check it out.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkshen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkshen, who covers baseball for ESPN, which in the last 18 years or so has meant spending a lot of time watching Miguel Cabrera hit. Tim, number 500 for him yesterday. Where does this, first off, the moment itself, it was cool to see the other players react to it, but also his place in history. What can you say about that?
Well, he's certainly one of the best hitters of his generation. He's one of the, at worst, 10 greatest right-handed hitters of all time. Five hitters in history, and he's one of them, have 500 homers and a .310 batting average. Five hitters in history have two batting titles and 500 homers, and he's in both of those groups of five. He's always been a great hitter, Buster, since the day he arrived. Of course, he had a walk-off homer in his first major league game. That was a sign of things. 2003, he joined Ty Cobb as the only 20-year-old ever to hit cleanup in a World Series game. And I'll never forget 2003, how he just spit on sliders away from Roger Clemens and others. It was remarkable how advanced he was at age 20. Here's how good he is, Buster. Jim Leland told me once, he said, screwing around in batting practice, I've seen Cabrera hit a homer on five straight pitches in BP, one down the left field line, next to left center, then right center, then down the right field line, just messing around. And Leland said, I've never seen anyone do that. I did a game in Detroit maybe 5 years ago, and Cabrera, there's no way the Yankees were going to pitch to him in this situation. They were just going to pitch around him. So he deked them. He intentionally got behind 0-2 in the count, So he would make them pitch to him, thinking, well, we got him. It's 0-2. And of course, he had a line drive up the middle. He was just toying with them. And these are examples of why Max Scherzer, when I was talking to him, this was a couple of years ago, he just shook his head and he said, Miguel Cabrera is the greatest hitter ever to walk this earth. That's how he described Miguel Cabrera. So say what you like. He's one of the best hitters I've ever seen as far as a combination of power, but the ability to get a hit.
So overnight, as you know, ESPN has great researchers, you know, with help from the Elias Sports Bureau. This number jumped out at me, and I've been processing it this morning and trying to really look at what it means. Miguel Cabrera's career batting average on balls in play is .341, the highest by anyone in the 500 home run club, passing Babe Ruth, who is a .340 BABIP in his career. And when I saw that, Tim, I thought, boy, for a right-handed hitter who, let's face it, during the course of his career, he's never been fast. For a right-handed hitter who doesn't get a lot of infield hits, to have that high of a BABIP, and pass it higher than anyone in the 500 home run club, that's pretty damn amazing, especially in this era of shifts.
Yeah, well, I remember another game maybe 6 years ago when teams really started to shift, that they ran a shift on Miguel Cabrera and put three guys on the left side of the infield, which now we often see with right-handed hitters. So he hit a ground ball right to where the second baseman should be standing in a normal alignment. And he laughed all the way to first base. He laughed as he ran to first because he was basically saying, you've got to be kidding me. You really think you can play three guys over there, give me a 100-foot gap between your second baseman and your first baseman, and you don't think I can get a hit over there? You don't think I can hit a ground ball to the right side anytime I want to? He just was toying with them again. That's how good he has always been, and I've always been dazzled by the things that he can do.
Yeah, now he was completely different than Tony Gwynn in terms of the power that he's had during the course of his career. But Tim, he actually reminds me of Tony, who I covered as a player for a few years, in terms of his ability to make adjustments. Like, it always seemed like Tony Gwynn, as we were talking with Joe Madden yesterday about David Fletcher, currently on the Angels, and Tony Gwynn's name came up, is an ability to direct the ball. The adjustments that the guys in this era are making are so different than, say, 50, 60 years ago when someone like a Babe Ruth was playing in the 1920s and 30s, where the pitchers, they weren't throwing 95. They weren't throwing 100. They were probably throwing 80 to 85. And there have been so many instances in which I've seen Cabrera, you know, during the course of a plate appearance, go strideless. In other words, he basically just keeps his feet in place and relies on his hands. Where that little leg kick that he had, that goes away. You could see him during the course of a plate appearance anticipate perfectly exactly what pitch he was going to be throwing. As you said, hit the ball the other way. I love, you know, the moment that I, you know, will always stick with me is when he and Prince Fielder were taking batting practice together, their first time in Lakeland, Florida in spring training after Prince joined the team. And here's Prince Fielder. He's been around baseball his whole life. And he looks at Cabrera and he says, how do you do what you do, hitting the ball all over the field?
Right. Well, that's what great hitters have asked him for years. Now, again, Buster, you talk about adjustments. Our hitters today, frankly, are not very good at making adjustments. They have one beautiful swing, and that's the only swing they have. If you throw it in that bat path, it's not a line drive to left field. It's 20 rows up. That's what separates Miguel Cabrera, is his ability to make those adjustments, which he started doing when he was 18 years old playing in Venezuela and was doing in the big leagues as a 20-year-old. That's the separator. Is he looks and says, all right, I'm not going to stride on this play. I'm going to swing the bat differently. This is going to be a different at bat than the last one. And that's what a lot of other guys can't do, that he has always been able to do, is adjust to the pitcher situation, whatever it takes.
So he hits 500 home runs. I don't think he's going to get 3,000 hits this year. He's got 45 to go, but early next year, we'll be having similar conversations about his place in history. To me, He should be unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame when his name comes up. You and I are in Williamsport. Last night we had the Little League Classic between the Indians and the Angels. And look, the ballpark was mostly filled last night, but I know from talking with you and others earlier in the day, the fact that there's just not as many people here with the COVID restrictions changes the event to some degree. Yes?
Yes, of course. I mean, there is nothing better than Alamedy Stadium on a night game with 25,000 people here and the hill just filled with people sitting on blankets watching a baseball game. There's nothing better than that. And we haven't had that. However, the play again this year has been so good that I am, as always, totally dazzled that the 12-year-olds are this good. They get on the mound, Buster. They throw the ball. They swing at it. They throw it back to the pitcher, and the same thing happens. The game moves so quickly. And it reminds me that the big leaguers games don't move like that anymore because guys aren't getting on the mound, throwing it, and trying to hit it. The infield play, especially the Tennessee shortstop, Ryan Pearson, it was ridiculous. The four web gems he made in one game. I've seen the Hawaii shortstop now twice. That kid's a high school shortstop already, and he's 12 years old. So I am not going to say that I'm not enjoying this because I've enjoyed every second of it without the fans here because the kids are still here. And ultimately what we're here to do is watch 12-year-olds play, and I am mesmerized by them. I could watch it all day, whether there's no one in the stands or 25,000 here.
Yeah, and I got to say this. I really feel like the last year when we saw major league games with no fans in the ballpark, that the players were really affected. I don't see little kids being affected. They're not thinking about that during the course of games, right?
Absolutely not. That's the point. They know when the game's over, they're going to eat pizza and ice cream. But these kids compete. And this is the other thing, Buster. I've been saying this for 6 years since I come here. These kids stand right on top of the plate. I mean, right on top of the plate. And they don't flinch and they don't bail and they don't cry when they get hit by a pitch. Fear of the ball runs all sorts of kids out of this game at a very young age. First time you get hit, you go, wow, that really hurt. And now I'm afraid. These kids are not afraid. I heard a story again yesterday from one of the coaches. One of their kids got hit in the eye with a pitch, flat, straight in the eye. And he came back and played soon after that because he's not afraid. That's the separator between the best kids at this age and so many others, is their courage and their fearlessness when there's a kid twice their size throwing 70 miles an hour and they stick their face right in there and say, I'm taking an AB here. Do what you have to do. It's really impressive.
All right. Give me the moment when you were a little eager, when you cried.
Well, my brother hit me in the head with a pitch in practice when I was probably seven. And we didn't even have those full helmets. Back then, it was like, it was just side, the little flaps on the side and nothing on the top. My brother had a great arm. He still does, by the way, and he's 65 years old. And he hit me in the flap with a pitch in practice. And I'm seven. Man, it really hurt. So I cried, and it hurt because my brother hit me. So I cried more than once. That was the first time I remember crying.
I got hit. A bat was thrown by a childhood friend named Brian Pierce and hit me in the right eye. I still have a scar above my right eye. And then I got hit by a foul ball in the first game that I ever played. Hit me right in the stomach. It felt like it knocked all the wind out of me. So I established myself as a crier in my first Little League game for sure. But I would say this. I played on bad teams throughout my Little League time. So losing what wouldn't make me cry. I was just used to that with the teams that I played on. That's for sure. So yesterday I got this thought was I was watching, you know, on television and Shohei Ohtani was speaking with little leaguers and going among those that one of the teams that he spoke with was around was the team from Oaks, Pennsylvania. You know, and I spoke with Jalen Bowman, one of their players, and asked him what it was like to meet Ohtani. He and his teammates were talking about how big Ohtani was, bigger than they expected. And then Jalen Bowman said to me, he was a pretty cool dude. And I was thinking that what's neat for these guys, Tim, is that in 25 years, you know, in 55 years, they're going to be talking with their kids, with their grandkids, and they're going to be able to say that I hung out with Shohei Ohtani in that amazing season that he had in 2021, which I think clearly is lining up to be something that we're going to talk about for years to come. You know, to speaking with Joe Maddon before the game yesterday, Matt Viskirjan and I were in the dugout, and he said, you know what? This might be something that we possibly may not see again for another 100 years. Like, that's how unusual this is, what he's doing this year.
Well, back to Jalen Bowman for a minute. He's a pretty cool dude, too, you know. He's like, he plays all sports, track star, really good baseball player, can really run. He plays the piano. He does all things that little kids should be doing and beyond. So he knows a cool dude when he sees one. Yesterday, Buster, we interviewed Mike Trout, not once but twice, which was really cool because he was really engaging yesterday, now being a father and watching little leaguers play in the state that pretty much borders the state that he grew up in. And I asked him about Ohtani, and I'll never forget the look on his face when I said, what's it been like to watch Shohei Ohtani this year? And the best player that a lot of people have ever seen just had that look on his face like, I can't believe how good he is. I can't believe what this guy can do. And that's the reaction from everyone who watches him play. I saw a little kid yesterday who got played in a game at Lomedy yesterday, got Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani's autograph yesterday.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
That's like the greatest day you could possibly have as a 12-year-old. And Ohtani's reach is just remarkable now. When he walked in that ballpark yesterday for the first time, he was just besieged. Kids everywhere. All they wanted to do was get near him. And I'm so happy that you brought this up, because the first thing that anybody says, kid or not, the first time they meet him is, I can't believe how big he is. That's the point. And to run like he can run at that size is absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, it was neat to watch the way that little leaguers reacted to him. In fact, during the game last night, when he came up to the plate with a chance for the Angels to come back against the Indians, the kids broke out into a chant of Ohtani, Ohtani, Ohtani. In talking with Joe yesterday, I heard a couple things that I hadn't heard before. We asked him about the process they went through talking with Ohtani about when he was going to play. And Joe acknowledged, like he said, that when we started this and they decided to take the bubble wrap off him, they had no idea. Joe said, I had no idea what he was capable of, because he hadn't really seen him as a good hitter. He talked about how his balance was off, and he talked about his evolution this year as a pitcher, that he's throwing a lot more strikes. And Matt was just astounded by that. And the other thing, he said that when they make decisions on whether or not Ohtani plays, it really just comes down to how Ohtani's legs feel. Like, if his legs feel heavy, those are the days when he's like, you know what, I'm going to stop. But Joe said, we haven't heard that this year. In fact, when he's gotten on first base, he said Ohtani is constantly indicating them, you know what, I can run, I'm ready to steal. And he said, we have to slow him down. You know, but that gives you an idea of just the range of talents this guy has, is that every time he gets on base, Joe says he's trying to steal.
Right. Joe told us that earlier in the year when we did an Angels game, that he has to rein Ohtani in when he says, give me the green light, let me run. And we saw it last night in the Little League Classic game. Buster, no one's ever had 100 extra base hits and 20 stolen bases in one season. Just another number. It's a reach that he might reach this year. A pitcher who's got 100 extra base hits and 20 stolen bases. Just put that sentence together and try to absorb it. And, you know, as far as pitching goes, Buster, since July the 1st, his ERA is under 2. He's been great. There's nothing this guy can't do. And I think Joe Maddon's right. We've never seen this season before from anyone, and we might never see it again unless Ohtani does it again next year, which certainly is within reason.
All right. I got a few quick hitters for you before you go. Just in preparing for the broadcast last night and speaking with people within the Indians organization, soon to be known as the Guardians, I get the sense that there's a feeling there that, you know what, this year maybe we didn't contend and the White Sox are going to wind up winning the American League Central, but we feel like we're in a good position next year. First and foremost, there's not going to be an offseason conversation about trading a star. Jose Ramirez is their biggest star. His contract, Tim, is so team-friendly, $11 million option for next year, and then a $13 million team option for 2023. They're not going to trade him because nobody could give them an offer that would replicate what his value is going to be. And when you look at the young pitching they have with Shane Bieber presumably coming back next season, that could be a team that could roll out a dominating rotation.
Right. And we saw Cal Quantrill last night. And of course, I've seen him before, but he's one of the most underrated pitchers in the game. He was dominant last night. He worked quickly. One inning, I'm sure you saw, Buster, he was out there throwing pitches before the rest of his team even got out on the field. He's already throwing warm-up pitches. That's how excited he was to be out there because his stuff right now is so good. That two-seamer was running all over the place last night. And you're right. With the young pitching they have and the way they use their young pitching, I wouldn't be surprised. I still don't know if they'll score enough runs to win 92 games next year, but they're going to pitch really well once Bieber gets healthy. And again, that's the best I've ever seen Cal Quantrill throw. And it was really impressive.
So in early July, as we looked at the playoff races and we talked about what might happen before the trade deadline, one thing I said in the podcast was, well, we know that the two wild cards are coming from the National League West. You know, the Padres and the Dodgers and the Giants are so far ahead of the field that other teams just can't reasonably expect that they're going to catch up. Well, Tim, the Cincinnati Reds have blown by the San Diego Padres, who have simply stopped winning. So another one I got wrong.
Well, me too. I don't know how many times I wrote and said, this is a guarantee. The three National League West teams are all going to the playoffs. And now I'm not so sure. As we've talked about, Buster, the Padres are not a great offensive team other than Fernando Tatis Jr. And he can't carry a team by himself. But more important, their pitching, which was so good for 3.5 months, hasn't been very good. The league has hit .267 off of them, which is a very high number these days, since the All-Star break. And that staff, which was so good, is now being knocked around. And now they're in trouble because we know the Reds are a pretty darn good team. Joey Votto's having an MVP quality season, and their schedule is pretty darn favorable the rest of the way. I would say at this point, the Reds are going to make the playoffs, not the Padres, which means I might be wrong again, but I've been wrong 200 times this year on the Padres. I thought they might win the division. Now I'm not sure they're going to make the playoffs.
On the day of the trade deadline, the New York Mets were in first place. Tim, we're just 3 weeks later. They're 7 games out of first place behind the Atlanta Braves. Are they done?
Well, I think they're done in the division race, yes. The Braves have won 13 straight road games. The Braves have won 13 of their last 15 games. I mean, look at their offense. Adam Duvall drives in 2 runs every game. Jorge Soler hits home runs again after not hitting them the first half of the season. Freddie Freeman's always good. Dansby Swanson might hit 30 homers. They might get 30 homers from all 4 infielders. That's never happened before. And even though their pitching isn't what we thought it would be with injuries, Max Fried was great the other night. The Braves are going to win that division. I am relatively certain of that. And I just don't see the Mets catching them. And again, I don't see the Mets making the playoffs. And I would have never thought that a month and a half ago.
No. And now the question is going to be, if in fact the Mets don't make the playoffs, what changes are coming? Because it's pretty clear when you've got Steve Cohen, their owner, tweeting out about, it's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. And Francisco Lindor answering questions about what Steve Cohen tweeted out the other day. There's going to be changes and a lot of speculation among executives with other teams about what form those will take. The Braves' last 3 wins came against the Baltimore Orioles, whose losing streak, Tim, is now up to 18 consecutive games. I never would have guessed that a team would threaten what the 88 Orioles did. Tell me some stories about that team with that losing streak.
Well, I covered all 21 that year. It, of course, was the American League record for consecutive losses. And, of course, it started the season. So they were 0-21. There are a million stories that I have off of that team. But after loss number 17 in Minnesota, Frank Robinson, the manager, who always made us laugh, he took the writers out to dinner. Never happened before, never happened after that. But he decided I guess I need some strength here. I got to go have some fun with the writer. So he took us out to eat. So halfway through dinner, they're 0-17. I asked him, I said, Frank, has anyone interesting called you during this losing streak? And he said, yeah, the president called me today. So Frank was a big kidder. So I pushed him on it three times and finally he yelled at me. He said, damn it, the president of the United States called me today. I said, Frank, what did he say? He said, Frank, I know what you're going through. And Frank said, Mr. President, you got no idea what I'm going through. That's how bad the Orioles were that year. It was unbelievable. Scotty McGregor, one of my favorite guys on the team, told me after 14 games, he said, a high school team couldn't lose 14 games in a row. And there were the Orioles with Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken on that team. And they lost 21 straight games. That was one of the worst pitching staffs I've ever seen. It was one of the worst defensive teams I've ever seen. But in the end, Buster, I felt a little bit sorry for him. It was just pathetic. And my dad, who was a PhD in mathematics, undergrad at MIT, he did the math for me because I asked him, I said, Pop, tell me what are the percentages? What is the likelihood that a major league team could lose 21 games in a row? And he came up with some ridiculously complex equation. And it was like one in, you know, 38,000 chances that a team could lose 21 straight. So I think about that all the time, that the Orioles have lost 18 in a row. Amazing.
It is amazing, and I'm sure that if this continues and they actually get to 21, then we are going to be having the conversation, are the 2021 Orioles the worst team of all time? I got to say, you know, just in the last 3 days, I've been talking with officials from other teams, and we're, you know, the Orioles come up because they're losing streak, and I mentioned to them, do you know what the run differential is during this losing streak? And I believe as of today, I might be off fair. It's minus 102. That means that they're losing, Tim, by about 5.5 runs per game. And you mentioned about feeling sorry for players. Look, I'm, you know, known Brandon High for years, got to know him when he was a coach with the Cubs. I mean, Trey Mancini's a great guy. Root for Cedric Mullins. They're good people on that team. I feel sorry for them, but that's the territory we're talking about, where you're a major league team losing by an average of 5.5 runs per game. That's almost unthinkable.
Right. And Buster, they've already set the modern major league record 1900 on with 16 straight losses, all by multiple runs. Even that, you know, that 88 Oriole team lost, I think it was game number 7 against the Royals. I think it was 2-1, 3-2. Jeff Stone lost the ball in the lights, but they should have won. And it was a one run loss. They should have won that game. The Orioles shouldn't have won any of these games because they're getting blown out so bad. Just another reminder, when you have starters ERA around or over 6, you don't have much of a chance in today's day and age.
All right, Tim. Well, stay safe. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Drive safely home, Buster. Be careful with the flooding and everything else.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
In the days leading up to Little League Classic, I got a chance to catch up with Angels All-Star Jared Walsh, rapid fire.
What's your best memory from playing Little League?
Oh, man. Best memory from playing Little League. Best memory, I don't know if it's the best. How about the weirdest? My My 8-year-old baseball coach, Buddy Freeland, who's still a personal friend today, I had a bee fly into my mouth in the stinger, got caught in my lip in the middle of a baseball game. He pulled a credit card out and popped it out of my lip. So that's probably the most memorable Little League moment. It's not even really baseball, but, you know.
I was thinking of like your first home run, that sort of thing.
First home run. You'll never forget that one. But most unique memory was the bee stinger one.
Okay. Tell me something that happened when you were playing Little League that made you cry.
Probably an 0-for-4. I played when I was 12, I played in Cooperstown Dreams Park, which is like a pretty big tournament for the travel teams across the country. And we played in the championship and I struck out to lose the championship game. So there were some waterworks there.
Who was your favorite player as a kid and why?
Favorite player as a kid, Barry Bonds. Just the dominance and the consistency that he brought, watching him as a hitter was something special. I mean, I loved Alfonso Soriano. There was a ton of different players, but Barry Bonds' favorite of all time.
Tell me about the first time you tried to get an autograph.
I tried to get an autograph from a very prominent relief pitcher who is in the Hall of Fame. And he turned me down. My mom never forgave him. I did. It doesn't bother me. Saw him in the airport, didn't get it. So I've got plenty of other autographs, though, so no complaints.
What was the best autograph you got?
Oh, man. Best autograph I got. I think Jason Kendall outside of County Stadium. My family was big Pirates fans back in the day. It was the late 90s, and I think we got his autograph there. So that was kind of the first special one that I recall.
All right, one of the scenes you always see with the Little League World Series, people going down the hill in the cardboard. Something maybe that you're going to be trying to do.
I'll do it. We have a member of our staff named Ali Modami who was telling me the same thing. He's like, I can't wait to ride down the cardboard. So hopefully he and I get to do it together.
What do you anticipate in terms of your interaction with the kids that day?
I think it's going to be awesome. You know, I would have liked to get the opportunity to talk to a major league player when I was 12 years old. And, you know, we have a lot of guys who are a little bit more prominent in the game than I am right now. But getting to be around Shohei and Mike Trout and stuff like that, I'm assuming is going to be really exciting. So hopefully they have some good questions for me and I can give them a little guidance.
All right. You've been a two-way player in your career. Do you think what Ohtani has done this year makes it more likely or less likely that other players will get the opportunity to try to do it?
I think it's more likely that other players get the opportunity. I haven't really seen anyone else with his skill set, though. So I would say the production that he's putting up being repeated is probably not likely.
What's the most amazing thing that you've seen him do this year?
I go back to this all the time, but the Seattle ball, he hit a ball in the upper deck there and I was on deck for it. And it was, you know, I've seen it in my head a million times. He hits it and I'm watching it, waiting for it to come down with the trajectory. And it just hits like the third deck way up there. And I was blown away.
What about him at the All-Star game? What did you see in those 2 days there from him?
Just a pro, you know, had a lot of people tugging on him, pulling him different directions. Always had a good attitude and then goes out. He's throwing 100 miles an hour and leading off. So pretty much what you expect. We hold him to such a high standard, but, you know, he really seems to fill the expectations.
Now, you had a reputation in college as being a great jokester. What's the best joke that you ever pulled off on a teammate?
So I'm not like a practical joke person. I'm just a more like doesn't shut up in the clubhouse kind of guy when it comes to the teammates. So I don't think I have like a great example of one thing that I did. I just kind of like messing with people.
Any joke that you, what's the best, if you have a joke off the top of your head, or is it just have to, you're reacting to a moment?
Yeah, it's honestly just like, try to be quick-witted. Nothing premeditated.
Give me an example that of something you've done with either Ohtani or Trout. I'm catching you cold, I know.
Yeah, you are. Oh, well, basically we have these little pillows for Shohei, a promotional pillow, and it's got his face on it like, how many times? Like 9 times on each side. So I did one where he's got like a curly mustache, one where he's got a James Harden beard, one where he's got sunglasses on, like just that kind of stuff. Mess around, keep it light throughout the season.
What was his reaction when he saw that?
He walked up and said, bad teammate, and then started laughing at me and walked away.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. Let's go to the close matches at tennis or baseball. This person writes in, I know some people won't like me asking this question, but how many consecutive losses do you think the Orioles will have before they finally win a game? Of course, we've discussed several times. They're at 18 right now.
Boy, Taylor, I must feel like you are better qualified to answer that question. Their next series is against the Angels. It just came off a three-game sweep at the hands of the Indians. So it's not like the Orioles are playing an immortal team, but my God, the Orioles are getting destroyed.
Oh, yeah. And like you just said, they're not the Angels aren't immortal, but the Angels are definitely way better than the Orioles are. And then it looks like we got the Rays over the weekend, and the Rays have just absolutely destroyed the Orioles this year. So if a win comes, I think it's going to be in these next three games. If not, we might have to wait till next week. Yikes.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty awful.
Yeah. Let's go to Jack McGee at JMCG7517. Jack writes in, Buster, I know schedule making is difficult, but shouldn't Major League Baseball be a little more thoughtful in late season stretch run schedules? Braves feasting on the Marlins while the Ozers, good one, Jack, and the Ozers while the Mets have 2 weeks against MLB's best doesn't seem right.
Well, and you just don't know, because their schedules, of course, are put together basically, a year ahead of time. You don't know who's going to be good and who's bad. I mean, the Marlins last year were a playoff team. And so I think that their struggles, to the degree of their struggles, have been a surprise this year. And you mentioned the Mets have 2 weeks against MLB's best teams. Nobody thought a year ago that the Giants would be in this position, that they would have the best record in baseball. So it's hard to anticipate. The one thing I do wish that they would consistently work to do is down the stretch, have some of the traditional rivalries, make sure you get Cardinals Cubs down the stretch, make sure you get Yankees Red Sox, make sure you get, the Dodgers against the Giants or the Dodgers against the Padres.
Next up is Billy Flanagan at Billy Flan. Billy writes in, I'm a Rangers fan. Can someone explain the difference between a successful and unsuccessful rebuild, timeframes, prospects, winning games, etc.? At least the Orioles are worse, barely.
Well, if we're talking about, a rebuild or retool, look, there's some times where it's successful. The Astros obviously was successful. The Cubs successful. The White Sox successful. There are a lot of times when it's not successful, and I cite the Phillies as being the classic example. They went into that tank cycle where they took their payroll way down, they drafted near the top, and they really haven't gotten any kind of payoff for that. The Padres, went into a tankathon, and now they came out and they had success last year, a lot of fun to watch. Beginning of the year, it was a lot of fun. It's just executives of other teams have noted how quickly that their window might go by. Like, they don't have a pipeline of pitching now because of all these trades they've made. And this is why with the Orioles, people are like, well, we have, I think the other day, they're ranked as the second best farm system in baseball. There's no guarantee that's going to pay off. And remember, it's not like the Orioles are like two players away from being contenders. Like, they need to find 20 good major leaguers. That takes a long time, which is why the idea of them being relevant in 2022 or 2023, I think that's a long shot, Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nothing is guaranteed. And the Pirates, they've been tanking basically for my entire adult life. Well, they got nothing to show for it.
No, that's not right. It's so funny. I had this conversation about, the Pirates were arguably baseball's best team, like in 2013, 14, 15. Like those 3 years, they were great teams. They were a threat to win the World Series. And then being a small market team, their window went out. Now, recently they have. Yeah, for sure. They've gone into this rebuild / tanking mode in recent seasons, but they actually had some good seasons, even your Orioles.
Yeah.
Like when Buck was the manager, they were good teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I got something to say about those Buck teams tomorrow. We can talk about it later.
Okay.
Matthew Porto writes in at 30-year-old Mulberry. You keep saying Tatis Jr. will win the NL MVP if he stays healthy, but Trey Turner is leading the league in average and stolen bases and is currently leading the Dodgers to possibly a comeback for the division lead. Front runner? Question mark?
Yeah, Matthew, I wouldn't rule out. I think Trey Turner is at this point the biggest threat to Fernando Tatis Jr., but Tatis Jr. leads the National League in home runs. He scored more runs than Trey Turner, and only one National Leaguer ranks higher in WAR, and that's Max Muncy. So I still think Fernando Tatis Jr. is the leader. It is possible that Turner will come back. And I think Freddie Freeman it's possible as well. He just keeps on hitting. What's he batting, like 337 since May 7th?
Last one for today. Debbie Gammons Brown, DGV, writes in, I think Buster needs to elaborate on eating cow grain and dog and cat food as a kid. Sounds weird, even for Buster. I don't know anything about this, Buster. Obviously, something you discussed last Friday or Thursday.
Yeah, we did. You know what? And I'll tell you what. Let's save that conversation for another day, because I have an explanation. It actually came up at the end of my family vacation. My three siblings were on the porch, and we all talked about that, that it was a surprise to me as I've talked with them that that they didn't. I did have one sibling admit that Amelia admit that she had tried some cornmeal that we gave to our calves.
All right. We will definitely circle back to that one. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And check out King of Crenshaw, 30 for 30 podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, especially with everything going on in the Northeast. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.